The Economic Alliance presents the Gulf Coast Grow Show, recording from the Shell Studio, with your hosts, Jason Lee and Clint Aiken. Our mission is to highlight stakeholders and activities that drive the Houston Port Region's economy.
Welcome to the Gulf Coast Growth Show. I'm really excited about today's show. We're really talking about 2020.
Yeah.
And as we get ready to kick off 2020, some of the dynamic stuff that's happening in our marketplace. And I'm your host, Jason Lee. This is my co-host.
I thought you forgot who you were for a second.
I never forget who I am. Trust me. I'm your host, Jason Lee. My co-host.
I'm Clint Aiken.
Yeah, and we're.
I didn't forget who I was.
Okay, and we are here with Adil Malik, and he is representing our sponsor, McCarthy Builders, and they're really and highly in tune with all the great work that's coming on and that's coming down the pipe and literally coming down the channel for us in the next 2020 and 2021. That's almost as hard as Sally sells seashells by the seashore.
Yeah. You got it right this time.
Well, that's why they pay me the big bucks. But yeah. So with that being said, before we dive into the show, really our goal and our objective today is to make sure that we highlight just that, the work that's taking place, some of the work that McCarthy's doing in the community, and highlight a lot on that, and then talk about the diversification of just the projects and the growth that we're seeing here in the Houston area. So it's a really should be a great show. Excited to have you on the show. But before we jump in, tell our audience a little bit about your background, a little bit about your experience, and kind of what led you to be on the show today talking about all this great stuff that we have going on.
Sure. I really appreciate being on the show. Jason, I've known you a little over a year now, and Clint, I've known you about 5 years. Yeah. So, you know, it's real good talking to you guys in this environment and in this setting. A little bit about myself. So, born in Pakistan, and then grew up in Zambia, just north of South Africa. Was there from essentially 2 years old to 14. I don't remember much when I was two, but by the time I was 14, I vaguely remember a few things.
Right.
But Zambia was a really, really cool experience, kind of growing up as a child. Just had the, my brother and I've got two younger brothers, but I'm an Irish twin, so my younger brother, middle brother, him and I, we kind of did everything together. We got into trouble together, you know. We blamed each other for everything. Me being the oldest, I obviously kind of got blamed regardless of who did what. But just growing up over there, we had a ton of freedom, and it's weird to kind of say that sometimes, you know, being in the land of the free now. Just the opportunities that we had growing up as a kid, you know, we would kind of race out of the house at 7, 8 in the morning on the weekends, and we wouldn't come back until 6 at night,
right.
You know, and, you know, we were 8, 9 at the time, and, you know, not a care in the world, and it was just a lot of fun growing up.
Awesome.
You know, fast forward a little bit, about the time we're kind of getting ready to kind of think about college and everything, my parents were trying to decide on whether we should go to the UK or the US. Ultimately decided to come to the US, which was great. You know, moved to Houston in 92, graduated from the west side of town in Alief, from the Alief district. And then proceeded to go up to New Jersey. So I went up to Rutgers. My dad wanted to move to New Jersey, so my younger brother and I, we both went to college in New Jersey. And my dad never followed, so I think he was just trying to get us out of the house. I think that was just his way
of
saying,
"Come on, family, we're moving." We're not. You two are.
Same plans.
Yeah, so he was up there. In fairness to him, he was up there for 6 weeks in the middle of February. Exit 2 of the turnpike, which if you're from Jersey, everything goes by exit numbers.
Right.
You know, so exit 2 on the turnpike, which is in between nowhere and nowhere. And so he didn't like it, came back, and I said, "Dad, you came here in the middle of nowhere, in the middle of winter, Yeah, of course you're not going to like it. So, but he moved back down to Houston. My parents are over on the west side of town in nice. Katy. My youngest brother was the smart one. He did not fall for the, hey, let's move to New Jersey. He went to UH and got his master's from UH, and he's doing extremely well, and he's out in Katy as well. So,
nice.
So I still have a brother that's up in New Jersey, but him and his family, they're looking to move down to Frisco next year. So
great.
Excited to kind of have all of the family back in Texas again.
That's exciting. So, that will be fun.
You know, so.
Now, in your role at McCarthy, tell us about that.
So I've been with McCarthy about a little over 6 years mm-hmm. now. When I moved from New Jersey, I kind of wanted to leave Jersey. I was getting tired of the cold weather and kind of approached two companies. Zachary was one of them and McCarthy was the other. Just couldn't really get a timetable on scheduling an interview with Zachary. Ended up interviewing really well with McCarthy and got offered a position in Dallas. Started off as a senior estimator in Dallas. There was an opening about a year later for a position in Houston. You know, kind of wanted to come closer back home to, you know, what's kind of been my roots here in the U.S. is Houston. So a year after I started up in 2014, I ended up back here in Houston. And slowly but surely over the past few years, kind of worked my way up into chief estimator. So I'm chief estimator for our Heavy Civil Marine Group.
Wow.
Kind of focuses primarily on infrastructure, you know, the project and growth in the ship channel, industrial facilities. Those are kind of projects that my group oversees.
Great. So. And I think that for our audience especially, they're going to be excited to hear about that. Because there's a lot of stuff coming down the pipe.
Right. That's
a big project.
You're at the level of where, you know, I guess bidding for a lot of the work, trying to communicate, trying to share that. So I want to kind of take our audience through kind of what that journey's like, right? So because a lot of people who tune in, even folks that are in the industry, they don't realize it. They they go to work, they do their job, and they see construction crews everywhere, but they don't really understand the dynamics and the what's taking place, especially what makes this market so unique. I mean, you said you left Dallas, you came to Houston. What have you seen in the Houston market since having come over here?
So with Houston, I mean, it kind of starts with the diversity of programs that we have and the diversity of work type that we have in Houston.
Mm-hmm.
If you rewind back to the 90s, and I'm going to show my age here a little bit because I graduated high school in the mid-90s, but back in the early 90s,
totally.
Houston was a lot different, right? And, we relied 100% on oil and gas, and mm-hmm. how oil and gas went, Houston went.
Mm-hmm.
When it was good, Houston was good. When it was bad, Houston was crippled. Since then, Houston has seen a lot of diversity in different work types. We've become the medical center. You know, we're the epicenter on the medical world. Everyone comes down to mm-hmm. Houston, you know, for expertise as it relates to the medical field. And that transpires into some of the commercial vertical market work that we end up doing. One of the strengths that McCarthy has is we're consistently ranked as being in the top five best hospital builders in the U.S.
Oh, wow.
Coast to coast. We do quite a few hospitals here in Texas. We're finishing up the Fort Bliss Hospital in El Paso, which is roughly a billion-dollar hospital, and
right.
I didn't think hospitals could get that big, but coincidentally, we actually celebrated the substantial completion for that project today.
Oh, okay.
So we're real excited about that.
Sorry to make a mess out on the party.
That's been.
But thanks for being here.
Yeah, that's
so what's
been.
What's the after party like for a $1 billion project? Because I might have to change my plans.
Yeah, it'll be interesting. Definitely excited about that one. But it's been, you know, there've been a lot of folks that put in a lot of hard work and effort into that. It's been a 6-7 year long journey to get that project where it is today. So really excited about all the various teams that have been part of that particular project. But hospitals are what we're really known for. We do a ton of hospitals from coast to coast. And then outside of the hospital side of things, we've got a hospitality that focuses on hotels. We've got a cultural arts and museum kind of group that focuses on that. And then we've got our heavy civil infrastructure group, which is what I'm part of.
Great.
And so one really unique thing, I think, you know, out of all the various components that McCarthy has, I think Houston is the only city that McCarthy really brings all of its specialties into the one city.
So
we don't necessarily do our heavy civil and some of the other, or we may not do the water, wastewater, like we do over here or other parts of the country. But in Houston, we do it all, which is really interesting, you know, in my mind. And that's what I mean, like, by the diversity of work types that we have here in Houston. And, you know, it's just amazing. Right now, we've got about $1 billion or so of ongoing work just inside proper Houston.
Right.
So, wow. You know, that's a tremendous amount of work. And that's between hospitals, museums. You know, we're building the Kinder Museum, the Museum of Fine Arts. Mm-hmm. That's with the Kinder Foundation, Richard Kinder Foundation. And we just finished the Holocaust Museum expansion project as well. We're working for the city of Houston with the water wastewater treatment plant on the northeast side of town. Wow. That's roughly a $1.5 billion project.
Oh my
gosh. Our portion of it's roughly around $320 million. It's basically a 5-year long project. So, you know, there's a tremendous amount of work that's going on here in Houston.
Well, that's exciting. And we're going to talk a lot about what's taking place right here in our backyard as we transition the show. I think that's a great way for us to parlay into what's taking place really in the Ship Channel. You guys are in the industrial and civil engineering, right?
Yep.
And maritime piece. So why don't you walk us through what's kind of lined up for 2020 and 2021?
Yeah, so here in Houston, I mean, over the next couple of years, what really is going to be the big spur that's going to really spark more, I guess, infrastructure growth is going to be the Ship Channel widening and deepening.
Okay.
That the Port of Houston is looking to do. So the Port recently just released its 2020 through 2024 capital expenditure plan, and they're essentially looking to spend $1.3 billion over the next 5 years. What's interesting, though, out of the 1.3, almost half of it is getting spent essentially in the next 2 years.
Nice. Wow.
So that's a tremendous amount that's getting spent out. And
it's a big, lot of work for a lot of people.
It is. Mm-hmm. And a big portion of that chunk is devoted towards the channel widening and deepening. So once, right now, the channel width essentially allows one ship kind of going, or two ships kind of going back and forth inside the channel. This is going to double that capacity. So you could just think about the number of ships that have access in and out of Houston. So to that extent, as that project, you know, which is essentially a precursor to even more growth and development within our region, once that project kind of gets underway, it opens up the opportunities for further investment and development within Houston and the surrounding areas of Houston.
What we're talking about,
I was reading an article this morning, actually, sorry to interrupt, mm-hmm. but they're talking about how 2019 so far, and we're not even through the year, the Houston Ship Channel has already seen a 13% increase in traffic.
In traffic, exactly. Mm-hmm. And those numbers are just going to increase. You know, by the time 2021, end of 2021 hits, you know, the Ship Channel expansion project that's going on and the Beltway 8 widening, that should be kind of winding down, which will, again, that's kind of designed with piers. The piers are set up so allow for that extra width, and you can get better ship traffic in and out of Houston.
So that's unbelievable.
It truly is remarkable to see the level of effort and planning that's going on to try to make sure that Houston stays as the epicenter for port marine infrastructure coming in. You know, Houston's one of the largest ports in the U.S. From a total cargo perspective, and it's really great to see that they're continuing to do that investment, you know, within on the port side of things.
So right. Along with the deepening and widening, one of my questions is, how's that going to affect the people that have terminals along? Are they going to have to do repairs and construction on their terminals as well?
Yeah, so with the widening of the channels, there's going to be, the facilities are going to be upgraded essentially. The bulkheads are going to have to be made larger or bigger, because part of the deepening will also allow for bigger ships to come in. So part of the bigger ships is going to require revamping and renovation of those existing bulkheads.
And that's not included in the $1.3 million.
No.
I mean, that's
the one point.
Site owners have to kind of pony up the dough for that, right?
That's correct. But, correct. The $1.3 billion right now is strictly just the Port of Houston funding. The private entities and private market that's out there will be you know, upgrading their facilities to allow for these bigger vessels to come in, you know, and that's really what's going to drive a lot of our
growth. Maybe throw a ballpark on that number?
I'm not sure what it would be, but I would say it would be at least dollar for dollar, if not maybe two.
Okay.
You know, so there'll be a substantial amount.
So a lot of work around the ship channel for the next 2-3 years. Definitely.
Yes, absolutely.
Yeah, that's
absolutely.
Awesome.
And then as, you know, as all of these facilities are starting to handle more volume, the infrastructure portion of it, it kind of just follows behind. The landside infrastructure portion kind of falls behind.
Oh, it's huge.
So, you know, it's kind of no secret that Houston has some pretty tough traffic to kind of fight through. So one of the things that's interesting is TxDOT, you look at their capital expenditure program over the next 2 years, they're looking to spend $4.25 billion in the Houston district upgrading roads.
Wow.
Wow.
$4.25 billion.
That's a lot more of a lot more work.
Yes.
And if you'll follow me on LinkedIn, I can help you petition where they will do the work. I'm just kidding. Like I would, that's how you get 30,000 followers.
I just want he's not just another pretty face.
I know. That's how you get people to buy in. I want you to fix the pothole by my backyard.
Yeah.
No, but I think it is a great call out. What you just said is there's this this economic, you know, windfall that comes from just that $1.5 billion expenditure is requires a $4.25 billion expenditure,
and which then
all that then when you start opening up roads, you now have a more attractive real estate, which
Absolutely.
That attractive real estate then needs shopping centers, and we're just talking about opportunity after opportunity. And the great thing about our marketplace is what you described earlier is we once were a relying on just one piece of the industry, right?
Mm-hmm.
So if oil and gas was down, but now you have all these subsequent things that come in and out of our port, whether it's, you know, just sheer logistics, you know,
yep.
going back and forth. We are in a place, I guess, in our society, in our economic climate that we've never seen, really.
Absolutely.
The ability to continue to fuel that growth
mm-hmm.
is rampant right now.
So it is. And I think what helps make Houston now essentially an international city is as we start to upgrade our infrastructure or just improve it beyond where we're at current capacity-wise, I mean, they're starting to really look ahead rather than be reactive. We're more proactive, I would say, in certain aspects. But what helps kind of bring the people here to me is part of it is like the cultural investment that they've made. You know, Houston's one of the most diverse cities when you look at it from a population perspective. But outside of that too, it's like you look at the food. You know, food's great. I just mm-hmm. came back from a trip from Europe, and I kind of missed the food in Houston. Oddly enough, you know, ate some really good stuff, but missed the food, the diversity of food that we have here in Houston. And then the art scene. You know, like I said, back in the 90s, I don't know if there was a museum. I mean, I know the Natural Science Museum was there. I know got some stuff out in Galveston, but Moody Gardens. But that's expanded and it's much better, and we really are kind of becoming a cultural center, you know, for Houston.
Well, the arts district downtown, I mean, has been dramatically renovated.
It has,
they're getting bigger and bigger plays to actually come through with more headline actors and stuff. It's been pretty interesting to watch that as well.
Yeah, and what's also really cool to see is that they're not limiting it to just say downtown Houston. We're
right.
trying to spread it out towards the suburbs. So Sugarland's got their cultural arts center. Conroe's actually looking to
put
one up.
They've had some really good shows.
Yeah, Woodlands, Cynthia Pavilion's, you know,
yeah.
been really good. So there's a lot of different, you know, I think cultural and arts projects that are out there. And here within the next year, there's quite a few more, you know, north of $500 million worth of, you know, projects that are kind of going to be put out for Houston that I
right.
think is going to help attract or even retain the folks that are currently living here. It's just a better quality of life.
And we
right?
don't realize that, but for all those people that are employed by you that are living in this area or actively involved, that's just more work. It's just more opportunities. Give us an example, and maybe you can answer this question. If one of these projects, let's say the one that you just got awarded for $320 million,
mm-hmm.
How many, you know, how many people would be involved for McCarthy on that? And then if you involve the subs, I mean, how many jobs are we talking about?
So
probably created in a job that big.
Yeah, so the Northeast Water Treatment Plant, our portion of it's roughly $320 million. It's about a 4 to 5 year long project.
Mm-hmm.
From an office staff perspective, we've probably got around 40 folks out there, and then from a craft side, actually building the work, putting work in place, I'd say that number is probably around 200, 250, somewhere around there. And then when you factor in the subs as well, it's probably pushing around 350.
350 jobs for 5 years.
Yeah, just for our portion.
Unbelievable.
You know, just for our portion on that. So,
right. And then I'll take something, so that just kind of gives a scale, right? So you take that scale and then you take $1.5 billion of work in the next couple of years, just in this port region, leveraging that same skill, as an approximation, we're talking about thousands upon thousands of man hours and jobs and opportunities.
Just absolutely.
Unbelievable when you do the math, right?
Yeah, absolutely.
And I remind folks that the folks that are doing that job, whether it's behind the gates or out in the construction world, all the retail, all the support that goes into, for example, I always notice the when I'm over here and I go to lunch, there's not a restaurant within 5 miles of any place around here that doesn't, you can't go to like 12 and 2 p.m., everything's full.
Yep.
Yeah. Everything's full. There's never like a gap. Whereas I've been in parts of the city where you go into, you can find a nice little quiet place. Virtually impossible over here. You head up Beltway, you pull into a restaurant at 12:30, 1 p.m., 12 o'clock. That place is hopping.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah, you gotta have to get there around 11:30 to make sure you're not waiting.
That's unbelievable.
Yeah.
And so that's a testament to all the opportunity that exists here in our marketplace. And
absolutely.
I'm very enthusiastic about that. So, well, let's do this. I know McCarthy is doing a lot of great things. Again, we're thankful to have him a sponsor, but we're also thankful for the contribution that you guys do in the community, not only in our backyard, but really across the Houston area. Talk to us a little bit about some of the work that you guys are doing to give back.
Okay, so there are a couple of charitable entities that we kind of work with.
Mm-hmm.
American Heart Association is something kind of dear to me. So we're involved with them from a national level.
Mm-hmm.
And then at each of the local chapters, we're involved with them. So our Dallas area folks are involved in the Dallas chapter. Obviously down here, we're involved with the Houston chapter. But for me, it hits home personally because my dad had quadruple bypass surgery about 20 years ago.
Okay.
And my mom had a stroke a year later. Heart disease kind of runs in my family. So, the American Heart Association and the efforts that all of the volunteers go through, that always hits home for me. And so I always try to make sure that we're kind of proactive and involved in those events. Recently, they just had a walk here at the they typically do it at the Med Center. They change it around, and it was over by UH campus this year. We were able to raise $15,000 for that particular charitable event.
Wow.
Which was great. Again, love being part of that. And then the other entity we do quite a lot with down here in Houston is Texas Children's Hospital. We've been working with Texas Children's for several years now, and raising quite a lot of money. We do a lot of work with Texas Children's, and we kind of sponsor a casino night to kind of raise some funds. And this past year we were able to raise around $57,000.
Wow.
Texas Children's, and it was really good to kind of see all of our industry partners out there at the event, and just raise money for a really good good cause. So those are the two charitable organizations that we deal with consistently down here in Houston. Outside of that, we've got some mentoring programs that we're involved in. So one of the mentoring programs we're involved in is called IMPP. It's the Interagency Mentor Protégé Program. And IMPP is comprised of essentially five institutions or entities. The City of Houston, University of Houston, HCC, Metro, and Port of Houston are essentially the sponsors for IMPP. And they basically get together small business organizations, and they partner them up with industry leaders in the construction field or in finance, basically to be their mentor. And so we've been part of this program for several years now. I'm actually personally involved in it, so that's been a really good program to be a part of, because we're able to provide assistance to up-and-coming contractors or up and coming companies. It could vary from a trucking company to basically a food vendor to a construction company. There's a ton of folks that you kind of get experience to, and it's been a really great learning process, and being able to kind of just help someone get better.
So if someone wants to find out more information about that program, is there a website they go to? Or?
I'd have to check on that. I believe it's the IMPP. Not sure exactly who it is, but I'll have to double check that.
Okay.
IMPP.
Okay. Yes.
There you go. So easy to remember.
Interagency Mentor Protege Program. Yeah.
Say that three times fast. That one's.
Yeah, that's IMPP, IMPP, IMPP.
Their website. I'm down with IMPP. So, well, I tell you what, that's a great opportunity for us to transition to a little bit more about you. And so we're going to do that here in just a second when we get back from our commercial break from you guys, right, our sponsors. So we'll take that real quick, and then we'll let Clint take that part of the conversation.
Awesome.
McCarthy Building Companies. From the Museum of Fine Arts to terminals on the Houston Ship Channel, we understand the challenges and complexities you face when building here in the Gulf Coast region. As the oldest privately held national construction company, we have a clear focus on clients, community, and collaboration. Just to give you some context, our Houston-based business does 15 to 20 projects per year. We are employee-owned with over 2,000 employees throughout the U.S. and 250 in the Houston area. For more information on McCarthy Building Companies, please visit www.mccarthy.com.
Back and again with Adil Malik from McCarthy Builders. Excited to have you on the show. We did leave out one organization that was really on your heart. You want to make sure you capture today before we dive into the rest of our show. So why don't you capture that for us real quick and tell us a little bit about them?
Sure. So another organization that we're involved with is called the ACE Mentoring Program. Mm-hmm. And basically, the ACE Mentoring Program is a collaborative effort between the construction industry, the educational institutions, high schools, and the local communities to essentially give high school students a glimpse of what it's like to work or be exposed to architecture, construction, and kind of give them an idea of what that looks like. And so we've got quite a few folks that are involved in the ACE Mentoring Program, and they reach out to they work with local high school students and really give them that exposure, give them some feedback of what it's like to kind of work in the construction industry or work for an engineer or work for an architect, because I don't think a lot of students really understand the opportunities that we have within our industry. A lot of times everyone wants to either be in comp sci or in IT or something a little sexier, if you will.
I want to be an Instagram superstar.
Yeah, exactly.
But you can do that with a construction career.
Absolutely. And there's the number of opportunities, the construction industry in general is having a tough time attracting folks, to our industry. And so we're trying to do it at the high school level and sometimes even on a middle school level to try to get, younger students engaged into what it's like to be in the construction field.
Well, that's funny. I've got a slogan that says we've got to find a way to make industry sexy again. So that's important to us. The last time industry was sexy was when John Travolta was in that movie with the cowboy movie.
Oh yeah.
Urban Cowboy.
Urban Cowboy.
Yeah. So, because he worked in the plants. That's what, I'm just kidding. But no, we do. We've got to make it. And we talk about workforce development. So I'm glad that you brought that up, because it really is at the heart of the work that we're doing to try to hit that next layer of person. I think if more people got to see your sharp cowboy boots, they'd probably be more inclined to want to come on board. And
yeah, absolutely.
Every time I see them, I've got boot envy. I'm like, man, those things are sharp.
Boot envy.
I got to step up my game.
That is a quote from Jason Lee.
Yeah, boot envy. I'm going to the ABC event tonight, too. I know I'm going to have tons of boot envy when I get
I know what to get you for your birthday this year.
Yeah, exactly. Please. So if you want to get me a pair of those for my birthday, you can be a fest. With that, we'll turn it over to Clint to dive in on some of the personal stuff about you, man.
Talk a little bit more about you personally, and you don't have to divulge too much information, right? But we want to know what kind of motivates you. I mean, obviously, you're very passionate about mentoring. You're very passionate about this industry. You do a lot of research, and you're very plugged in to the community, which is awesome. But what motivates you to do that?
For me, I've always come from a background where I felt I needed to not only improve myself, but improve others around me. When I was in college, needed money, like every college broke student needs money. I became a tutor during my spare time and stuff. And I found that with tutoring, it was really nice because it was a one-on-one environment. And I was able to kind of really pinpoint with a student what their challenges were or what was inhibiting them from really extracting the information they needed. And the interesting thing with tutoring is since every person is different, you understand, or at least a good mentor or teacher is able to figure out what motivates an individual, right? And so at a relatively young age, I was kind of able, through the tutoring process, kind of be able to decipher and figure out, okay, how do I relate something so that they can understand it, mm-hmm. right? Because everyone's different, everyone's going to retain information differently. So being able to understand, how you can relate the information, I think makes it easier for that individual then to retain that. And right. So for me, it's always been, it's been fun to try to figure out, okay, how do different people, what motivates them, how do you get them engaged? And I kind of learned that at a relatively young age. So yeah, I've been fortunate with that, and just helping people grow, that's been a huge passion of mine,
That's great.
So
Well, I've noticed that in all of our conversations outside of this one, mm-hmm. But you're always moving forward and getting better. You have a good ability to look introspectively to how you can improve, and just in the time that I've spent with you, so it's great. And it's obviously being reflective in your career progression at McCarthy too. So it's exciting.
I'm gonna throw in a curveball and ask you, what's one of your favorite books?
Oh. Man,
I told you it's a curveball. I didn't warn you.
It is a curveball. I gotta think about this one.
It could be personal. It could be business. I know you read a lot. So,
all right. One of the books that kind of early on. I mean, the Tom Sawyer series. Oddly enough, I don't know if it was just the. I guess the perspective of being inquisitive,
sure.
that kind of came along with the nature of the mm-hmm. books, but that's really kind of what got me early on, because I'm curious as a cat. I've kind of been always my entire life, and I feel like that was one of the things that started or spurred the curiosity mm-hmm. for me. So kind of looking back, I would say that's probably like one of first series of books that have been.
I like that one too, because it. But my perspective was always I like to be Tom, and I want to get other people to do my work. Let me make this thing that I don't want to do look so much fun that someone else will do it for me.
Yeah.
I didn't even read books back then, so I haven't. I'm about to go back and check those out.
That was really all I wanted to follow up with. So,
awesome.
Was there anything else that you wanted to add to the maybe we didn't cover?
A couple of things, I guess, that I for folks that are kind of, whether they're starting up or whether they're in the middle of the careers, I mean, there's a couple things I think that have helped me be in the position that I am. One of the things has been to never be afraid to make a mistake or be wrong. I think sometimes folks are a little scared to take that next step because they're concerned about being wrong. They need to be on sure-footed ground, and sometimes, you know, it takes a little bit to kind of take that leap of faith. You know, when I moved down to Texas, my entire professional career was out in New Jersey, and I was leaving my entire support network out there, coming down to Texas and essentially starting off from scratch. And at the time, I had about 15, 16 years vested in New Jersey, kind of put that off to the side and started fresh down here. But that allowed me to be able to grow into the person that I am, and where I'm sitting today here, I'd never be in the same position had I not been able to kind of take that step. So don't be afraid to kind of just take a leap of faith, and don't be afraid to be wrong. You know, learn from your mistakes. You are going to make mistakes. We all do, but just make sure that we're learning from them, because a lot of times folks are hesitant of taking that leap, taking that jump because they're afraid to be wrong or afraid of making a mistake.
And guys, if you're listening and you want to practice on being wrong, just get married. So it's like I got a master's degree in the last 2 years. So like I'm an artist at being wrong.
Sure.
And then but that's great advice, though.
And then the other thing is don't be afraid to ask a question. You know, my first boss always told me that no matter what, if there's something on your mind or you're trying to get to something, don't hold it in. Always ask the question. And the reason is you always start off with the answer being no. If you don't ask the question, the answer is no, right? If you ask the question, there's a slight chance that the answer is yes or it's going to be in your favor, you know? And whatever that chance is, it may be a 1% chance, it may be a 10% chance. But unless you ask the question, you're never going to know. And so, you know, if there is something that's, you know, in the back of your head, whether you're dealing with a client, an owner, an engineer, you're dealing with a friend, whatever it is in any aspect of your life, if there is something that is troubling or you're second-guessing yourself, ask. You never know.
I went through a management training one time, and the two things that really stood out to me about that management training was regarding questions.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, one of the things they said is, first off, we don't expect you to have all the answers. We expect you to know where to go to find those answers.
Mm-hmm.
That's your responsibility.
Yep.
Secondly, none of us is as smart as all of us.
Exactly.
Wow, right? That's a great comment.
Yeah.
So
yeah.
Those are some of the things that, and it stuck with me all these years. I mean, I learned that 10, 12 years ago when I was doing a management training for actually retail. But, you know, it has stuck with me. And
yeah.
You're right. Knowing what questions to ask, asking the right questions, and not being afraid to ask questions, it really is important.
Yeah. And then the last thing I would say is knowing how to talk to people. You know, I think, and especially as we're starting to move, you know, into this age where everything is done electronically, we kind of lose the human element, the human touch.
Mm-hmm.
So understanding how to ask or how to talk to people. I always say that it's not what you say, but it's how you say it, right? So if there's something that you're looking for, you can usually get what you want, but it's how you go about presenting yourself. It's how you go about asking for it. So, you know, I think that's been something, again, and that kind of goes back to understanding the folks that you're working with, understanding what drives them, what motivates them, and how to interact with people generally.
So there's a book called Five Stars,
mm-hmm.
and it's about the art of communication, and he was the author was talking about the lost art of communication, and because of us moving to our society having moved to such a place where people are not engaging in, they're tied to devices and no longer able to do that, you're seeing people who can sit and carry, you know, showing up for job interviews and new opportunities and within organizations, those that can communicate orally and capture someone's attention and share it the right way,
mm-hmm.
are getting higher paying jobs, they're getting better opportunities, and they're separating themselves from the pack. So it's a great testament to what you just described. So I think that's awesome.
Yep.
So, and as we wrap up the show, we always love to close out with a little bit of attitude of gratitude. So would love to hear kind of what you're thankful for and what you're humble for, and we'll share the same and then we'll wrap it up.
For me, I mean, it's friends and family. You know, it always starts with family for me, and I'm just grateful to have the support of my family, of my friends. you know, whether it's at work or whether it's, you know, my brothers, my sis, my brothers, my mom, my dad. I don't have any sisters. That could be good or bad, I guess. But you know, they've been my rock. They've been my supporting anchor. And I wouldn't be where I am today without them. So,
that's fantastic.
You know,
that's awesome. I poked fun at wives, so I got to make sure I cover up my tracks. So I'll say that I'm thankful for my wife. So she does put up with me. I run all over the city.
She helps you not be so wrong.
But she keeps me guided. I shared a story the other day about the entrepreneurial spirit and how there's usually someone who has to keep that person tamed and reeled in and a little bit of a realist, and she helps me do that, so I'm thankful for that. So
for me, I'm really grateful. I've got a very strong group of industry peers. You know, it's pretty awesome. Some of them have been direct competitors with me, but they still, hey, I got this MSA, hey, I got this PO, and you know, we just really encourage each other and build each other up constantly, and it's nice to have that peer group. You know, we're not really worried about competing with each other. You know, it's nice that we can still support each other even if we are direct competitors in certain situations. But it's also nice having that to tap into.
Absolutely,
right?
Beautiful thing.
I mean, having that support and knowing that, hey, this person's got my back regardless of situation. And if we're going after the same job, we're still gonna, you know, be friends at the end of the day. It's amazing to have that kind of peer group. That's one of the things I love about this industry. I have not seen that outside of this space. So I'm grateful for those friends.
That's awesome. And we are we're grateful for our audience. We're grateful for you and your time today. Just been a pleasure. I was excited to get to have my friend come on the show, so it's always exciting. And so as we look to wrap up, we want to remind our audience, you can always tune into our YouTube channel, our LinkedIn channel. You can follow us there, the Facebook page. You can also communicate to us, reach out to Adil via LinkedIn. And then we always want to encourage our audience. We're advocates for our region. We want to help spread the word. I call it the gospel of industry. We want to help it get out to the individuals that need to know about the dynamic stuff that's taking place. So please share this with your friends,
absolutely,
and let them know. Thanks,
absolutely,
and have a great week.
Thanks.